Hey everybody, welcome to the first edition of U Sports Podcast. Jacob Berry here.
And Pat McNamara.
And we have a guest on the show today, Mr. Tom Simonisen, NBA expert. Tom?
Always good to be here, guys.
Gonna talk about some SLU sports to start off. Patrick, you want to do the rundown?
Yep, we're gonna give a quick rundown of SLU sports before we get underway with some basketball and the NFL draft. SLU men's tennis exited the A-10 tournament with a loss to Fordham, 4-3. Women's tennis coming up this Thursday in the first round of the A-10 tournament. Meanwhile, men's baseball beat Xavier 1-0 and then beat Missouri State 1-0 both earlier this week. And then softball with a huge 12-0 win on Sunday versus LaSalle. And then a 2-0 loss earlier today, though, against Southern Illinois, Edwardsville.
One thing I like to see in baseball more is my boy Devin O'Rourke to play. I just like to throw that out there. I'll talk to the baseball coach one of these days, get him some playing time. And sticking with baseball, we got some MLB news. Cardinals are the only team in the NL Central with a winning record. Probably will not last long. As far as I'm concerned, Cardinals... They'll start slowing down. Don't worry, St. Louis. Don't get all worked up.
Watch yourself.
Also, the Royals have lost 5 straight. We'll turn it around though. It's still early. We're not even 8% through this through this season. So,
how's that game they're playing now against Detroit? Are they still down?
Last I checked, they were 2-1. They're winning. And 3-2 winning right now. So we haven't been winning any close games, Tom, though. I'm expecting a loss, to be honest. But
we'll get underway with a little NBA here. A topic that's been coming up a little bit recently. Past couple years, it's sort of come over from soccer, really, is flopping in the NBA, and it's really picked up big this year. A lot of players. Chris Paul is Blake certainly Griffin. One of the bigger culprits. LeBron James. A lot of players flopping. And for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's basically when you fake getting fouled, flailing to the ground pretty embarrassingly to try and get a foul call. So that's been
Mr.
one of the
dictionary, Patrick McNamara.
That's been one of the more talked about topics in the NBA this year. Tom, what are your thoughts on
that? Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone remembers that the famous flop by Chris Bosh last year. I think it was sometime in late February where Carlos Boozer gets the ball and swings it around from his left side to his right side and very gently graces the nose of Chris Bosh. And I'm not kidding you. It literally, Chris Bosh stiffens up and then completely falls back to the ground.
I think he got shot.
Exactly. I think it's definitely it's one of the biggest problems in the NBA right now. And if you watch the Knicks Heat game, actually this past Sunday on April 15th, Jeff Van Gundy had some very colorful words about flopping in the NBA. From what I can remember, he was complaining that, oh, well, they pay David Stern some $25 million. He should be able to come up with some kind of anti-flopping rules to implement. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think something needs to be done. I've always said that in soccer, if you're caught flopping, you need to be given a yellow card, because if you get the benefit of the call, the other guy who supposedly took you down gets a yellow card, so you should get one. And they've started doing that in soccer. They've been carding guys for flopping, so they need to do that in the NBA. If you can draw a foul from flopping, then you should be able to punish if you get caught doing it. I honestly think it should be a technical. I mean, it's ridiculous seeing some of the ways people are falling. Chris Paul, the other day, an announcer said that he looked like he got hit by a truck. That's the wording they use. That's how bad the flop was. And there were three of them in that one game. I saw a little highlight film of that. I mean, it's ridiculous how much they're doing this. I've seen him, LeBron James actually – did one last year against the Bulls, and he winked to the Bulls bench after it, and this was all caught on camera. So these guys are well aware of what they're doing, and they still do it. You need to punish them somewhere. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. It's ruining the game to some extent.
To the refs' credit, though, some of those calls are really hard to make because of the angle that they're looking at and how quick the play is. I think a better way to handle this, and I think this is what Van Gundy talked about on Sunday, is to, after the game, look at some of those plays where players supposedly flopped. And if they flopped, you know, I'd say fine them $20,000, $30,000, and then to stop this ridiculous practice of acting to in order to get calls. I mean, what do you think about that? About fining them in the hopes of curbing this behavior?
Yeah, I like the fining idea better than PMAC's idea of the technical, because while flopping is taken away from the NBA, I also think, if you're handing superstars technicals for flopping, you know, you do that twice, you're out of the game. Don't you think that'd be bad?
Well, that's the point.
Superstars
are... get them to stop.
Yeah, but don't you think... The NBA is circled around superstars and how they... You know, the city rallies around Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City or other places like that. What if these superstars aren't playing in their games because they're getting... Well, because they're getting called for flops. I mean, isn't that bad for the NBA?
Don't you think they would stop flopping if there were technicals, though?
They might, but again, it goes back to, if they're not playing in this game, like I was saying, the NBA is circled around...
Yeah, but they would play in it unless they flopped. And it'd take two. It'd take two. So if you flop twice in a game, which is pathetic... and disgraceful, then you should be gone.
No, I definitely
you can get
agree.
People fouled out by acting, so you should be able to get out too by doing it.
I definitely agree. I think something they should do is have like a flop foul, like make it worse than a technical, maybe like two shots.
Or maybe a personal foul for it. But you got to maybe a technical.
I would even
go
as
harsh,
far.
But you got to do something.
I would go as far to say if you get five flops called against you, you know, it's, you know, a one or two game suspension. Because I think
throughout the season?
I think so. Because I think it's a huge problem, and we see a lot of it, especially with players like Chris Paul, definitely Blake Griffin, LeBron.
And it makes it harder on refs to make the calls.
Manu Ginobili, so.
Yeah.
But to your point about... using Kevin Durant as an example, I don't think that's a fair example because a player of his caliber, he doesn't like. I haven't seen Kevin Durant flopping all over the court as much as someone like Chris Paul does. Like, there's a video on YouTube you can look up, and it says I sent it to my co-host PMAC, and the video was called "Chris Knight Had a Great Night of ... Flopping," and it was a compilation of about 20 games of just Chris Paul flailing his arms all over the place. And yeah, it's embarrassing to see a supposed one of the greats and a professional athlete doing that. So
yeah, that's one of the reasons I like college basketball over the NBA. I'll just throw that in there, but that's for another day. What do we think about the battle that we have going on in the East with the Bulls and Heat?
Yeah, we could potentially, in the playoffs, have a Bulls-Heat Eastern Conference Final, NBA Semis. A lot of people are picking Oklahoma City out of the West, maybe versus the Spurs, maybe Lakers. But the general consensus is Bulls and Heat out of the East, playing each other to get that spot in the title. Anything can happen, but that seems to be a heavy consensus. So that'll be interesting. I have the Heat winning that one. I actually have them winning the entire NBA championship. But I have the Heat beating the Bulls. They beat them 4-1 in the series last year. I know Tom here disagrees with me on this, but they beat them 4-1. It was almost a sweep. And as far as I'm concerned, Tom, the Bulls got slightly better by adding Richard Hamilton. The Heat got slightly better by adding Shane Battier. So each team improved a little bit. Basically the same teams. Heat won 4-1 last year. What's going to change?
Okay, well, I think what's changed this season is Carlos Boozer. I think is definitely playing way better basketball this year than he did last year. I think he's definitely more efficient on offense. I think he's shooting 53 or 54% from the floor this season, and he's a lot quicker on defense. But at the same time, you can't rely on someone like Boozer, you know, to play against a team like Miami who plays really well above the rim. So,
Boozer's scoring is actually down 2 points from last year.
What's his shooting percentage?
It's up slightly, but the scoring's down, so yeah, pretty similar there.
But to go back to your point about the Heat winning, I mean, the Bulls and the Heat have only met 3 times this season, and the Bulls have won 2 of those. Miami's only won once.
One of them without Derrick Rose.
That's a very good point.
Right, but last year in the regular season, I could be wrong, but I think the Bulls swept the Miami Heat. Did they in the regular season
and
last year?
And I know the classic line is the regular season, yes, is irrelevant and doesn't matter. But if you look at the way that Miami played in those 2 losses to Chicago, I know in both of them, Wade and LeBron had a combined, I think, 70-plus points. So how can you score that many points and still lose a ball game? And I think this is going to go back to my point I was going to bring up later. The fact that Miami relies on those 3 guys so much, they completely forget about the guys on the outside for passing. They could easily score, I think, 10 additional points a game if they would just pass the ball on the outside and rely on those guys to shoot, and I don't think that they're taking advantage of that.
Well, they're still scoring more. They're scoring 4 more a game than Chicago is. So their offense has been better. And let's see here. Both teams are really good defensively. Bulls are actually first right now defensively. But what it comes down to is unless the Bulls are going to win by a lot.
Which I don't think they have any chance of doing.
So,
I think that whole series will be extremely close.
Yeah, and that's my point. Last year in the NBA Finals, when it came down to the last couple minutes, they put LeBron on Rose, and he went 1 of 15 in the NBA, the East Finals, when guarded by LeBron. 1 of 15. So anytime it's close this year late, they're going to do the same thing, and he gets smothered by LeBron. So unless Deng or someone is going to step up or Rose is going to decide to pass the ball, then it's going to be the same thing.
I mean, again, Luol Deng is, he's playing way more confident basketball, I think, this year than he has last year. You know, he's shooting those really clutch threes. He's amazing on defense. So I think it'll be a really interesting series. I can't wait to see. Hopefully they make it to the semifinals. I mean, I'm not sure. There's no reason why they wouldn't, unless there's going to be an upset. But on to predictions for the conference semifinals. What are you looking at?
I got OKC out of the West over the Spurs, who have been playing really well lately, offensively, pretty good. They're a little bit younger than in past years, got a little more depth. But I got OKC, and then I got Miami over Chicago. And then I'm going to take the Heat over the Thunder, but that's basically a coin toss to me.
I have a similar prediction, except I'm predicting that the Chicago Bulls will triumph and beat the Miami Heat. Let's hope so.
You still are yet to say what has changed that will give them an advantage over Miami.
I don't understand how you can make the point that, okay, so they lost this past game, what was that, on April 12th, last Thursday?
Yeah, but regular season, I'm saying from last year's.
I mean, I have no way. We'll have to see when it goes to the.
Yeah, fair enough.
The playoffs, but
who do you have? Bulls.
No, I'll go back to my point. I think defensively, Chicago is going to shut them down. They can play way better defensive basketball than Miami, and I think that the fact that Miami, like I said, does not rely on those guys on the outside to shoot, that is going to be to their detriment.
Mm-hmm. Jacob, what are your thoughts?
I got Oklahoma City coming out of the West. I think they'll beat.
Solid.
I'm going with a dark horse with the Clippers.
I actually had them earlier this season before Billups got injured. I thought they were going to make
it. I don't know about San Antonio, especially down the stretch with all. I know they're. I mean, they got a bunch of old guys. They're a team full of old veterans. Down the stretch, this is a shortened season, so they definitely. I mean, that might play in their favor where they don't have to play as many games, yeah. But I still think down the stretch they could start to go against them in that aspect. But then the Lakers, I'm not a big fan of Kobe. I know Bynum's coming on as of late, but he's not.
Play defense.
He's not going to carry them to the playoffs. But I don't know. The Clippers, Chris Paul seems to just get it done. So for some reason I got the Clippers coming out of there, just a gut feeling. And then when it comes to Miami, Chicago, I'm going to side with Tom here. Go with the Bulls. But so I'm going with a Bulls. OKC matchup. Not thrown out a winner yet, but.
Who do you have, Tom? Bulls, Thunder?
I've got Thunder. I mean, as much as it pains me to say, I think definitely Oklahoma's having the best season. I mean, they're having one of their best seasons. Kevin Durant's having one of his best seasons of his career.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Durant, Rose, LeBron, Wade, lots of superstars coming in for a potential NBA semis.
Sticking with
Chris
the,
Paul, even could be great.
Sorry to interrupt there, but sticking with the whole with the playoffs. I mean, the playoffs are coming up, you know, next Sunday on the 28th. Out west, it's a complete war zone for who's going to get that 8 seed. Right now, the Suns, the Rockets, and the Jazz are all tied at 32 games for that 8th spot. Who do you guys think is going to clinch that last spot come next week?
Honestly, it'll be pretty close. I would say, personally, probably got to look at the record or the remaining schedules because that'll be an important factor, which I haven't seen that yet, but I'd probably, as of right now, go with the Suns. Still got a good up-tempo pace, so. But I'm not too sure it'll be close.
I mean, I'm going to disagree with you on the Suns, but to your point about the schedule, the Suns, I believe, and they end their season playing the Thunder, the Clippers, Denver, and I believe San Antonio at this week going into next.
That's
so they have one of the toughest schedules going into the end.
Right now at 9:24 p.m. the Suns are up by 10 on the Thunder.
Oh wow.
But I predict who's gonna get that 8 spot is
also 4 of those 5 games are at home.
They are?
Yeah.
Okay. That might play in their favor then.
I'm going the Suns, along with PMAC here, they're the last 10 games out of those three teams, they're 7-3. The other two are 5-5, along with Houston losing their last 4. So definitely going into the playoffs, momentum plays a huge factor. Suns do have a pretty brutal schedule going down the stretch, but like I was saying, almost all of them are at home. And can't go against Steve Nash.
I mean, that's a good point. And tonight's game against the Rockets and the Mavs, I guess, is going to predict, for me, who's going to get that 8 spot. And I initially was banking on Houston, but, yeah, after 3 or 4 straight losses, that's absolutely pathetic. Yeah. But what I predicted, Denver's going to finish 37-29. Dallas is going to also finish 37-29. I've got Phoenix finishing 34-42, and Houston finishing 35-31, along with Utah for that tiebreaker. So I don't know. I'm gonna have to see who's gonna win this game tonight against Houston and Dallas. And as of right now, it's halftime and the game is tied at 55. So hopefully Houston can pull out a win and changed my mind on them getting that 8 spot. So we'll have to see as the season comes to a close next week.
All right, moving on to the draft. Coming up next week, is it Sunday? No.
It starts...
I think it's Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday through Sunday
is the draft. Yeah, first round is Thursday. So we don't have to. I mean, 1 and 2 definitely going to be Andrew Luck and RG3.
Yep.
But Patrick, who do you got? What are some of your dark horses when it comes to this draft?
I've got a. Well, if we want to take a look at it by position. We could start with quarterback. You wanna run through and give our best outlook by position, or best NFL stars, maybe.
All right.
Go through QB, running back, receiver, and then defense. We could give our quick outlook on who we think is gonna have the brightest future. Then maybe go through and look at some diamonds in the rough, maybe. If we wanna start at quarterback, I think we're gonna agree Andrew Luck, unless you've got Griffin. I don't know.
Well, if we're talking immediate success
for brightest NFL future overall. You thinking Griffin, maybe?
I mean, who else do the Colts have?
Yeah, they'll eventually build it up, but as of right now,
they didn't build anything up. Peyton Manning built them up. I don't think Luck has what it takes to fill Peyton Manning's shoes.
But my reason on Luck is that this year at Stanford, he had no receivers. They had the tight end Fleener, but he had no receivers. He had no downfield threats. If they draft him one guy, one good, and he's got Dallas Clark, if they just get him one good receiver, he could be very good.
Who's their running back? This season
they've got.
They don't. I'm pretty sure they lost.
Is
that
guy gone? Actually, I think I remember seeing that. Yeah.
So and you also have to remember all of Stanford's offense. They were the classic run twice, get third and short situations, play action, and he dumps it to the tight ends. Well, I mean, I don't see how that shows that you're gonna have a good NFL career, especially if you're in your first couple seasons. You don't know who your running back is. They're having line issues.
It may
That's
take a while.
Their line is the whole reason Peyton Manning didn't play all of last season.
Yeah. Well,
the Colts are in shambles right now.
Who do you have?
And I can't. And I hate Jim Irsay too. Yeah. I mean, Griffin definitely has a good outlook. The Redskins are doing everything they can to put a good team around him. But if we're going kind of off the board, off that top, those top two players, I think wherever Brandon Whedon falls, I think he could be a day one starter even.
Yeah, both of us being Chiefs fans, obviously, it would be interesting if they were to pick him up. There were some rumors they might want to start him immediately if they were to pick him up. I'll actually go for my dark horse at QB. Russell Wilson out of Wisconsin. This guy set the ACC passing record. He's short. He's 5'11". Drew Brees is too, so keep that in mind. But Russell Wilson is one of the best leaders in college football. He played a passing offense at NC State and put up records all over the place there. And then he went to a pro-style Wisconsin offense and put up, I mean, his completion percentage was off the charts. He was completing 80% all the time, it seemed, game in, game out. So he played in two completely different styles of offense from NC State to Wisconsin, did really well in both. And the only knock I've really heard on him is his height. So I see him as being a dark horse candidate, sort of someone that's being overlooked or underrated.
All right, I can see that. Russell Wilson definitely proved himself to me, especially that last season against, or playing with Wisconsin. I didn't get to see much of him at in the ACC, but he definitely, I mean, if my team were to draft him, I'd be happy. I'd like to see what he can do.
Yeah. If we want to move on to running back, best running back feature, we'll probably agree on this. I don't know, though. I'll see what you have to say. I'm going to go the obvious Trent Richardson.
He's
a freak of
He's one of the best backs to come out, and definitely, I'd say, one of the best prospects at this decade, possibly, at running back. To have the most upside, but I mean... It's hard to deny. I mean, LaMichael James, he's definitely not an everyday back, but he is. He's one fast.
Fast and runs hard. I was actually going to, since we're listing dark horses, I actually had him written down here as a dark horse or sort of an underrated with an asterisk next to it. So you got him as your potential, best potential ability, maybe. I've got him sort of as an underrated with an asterisk. The asterisk being, it depends on which team he goes to. If he, I mean, obviously, if someone like the Ravens or Niners, a ground and pound team, were to draft him, I think he wouldn't do anything. But those teams aren't going to draft him. Most likely a team like the Saints or Eagles that runs that sort of spread passing speed offense will get him where he could shine. He runs low, he runs hard, he's incredibly fast. He turns nothing into an 80-yard touchdown.
Could you imagine the Saints, if they were to run shotgun, two-back set?
Him and Sproles.
Yeah, LaMichael James on one side, Sproles on the other.
Colston and Graham over there. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it'd be pretty deadly.
I mean, there's so much to that you have to account for on defense.
Who do you have as your sort of underrated back?
I really like Bernard Pierce out of Temple. I mean, they played in the MAC, but I saw their bowl game. I can't remember who they played, but he just ran all over them. And every team who played Temple the entire season knew where the ball was going.
Yeah.
It was going right to him, and he didn't let that stop him. He still had put up unbelievable numbers. So, I think Bernard Pierce is definitely someone to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, good dark horse there.
And as we've seen, especially at running back, you don't need to have come from a place like Alabama to shine. You can come
running
from
back and receiver tends
Fred Jackson last year is a good example of that.
Yeah. Moving on to receiver, who do you like as your sort of star, best future outlook in the NFL from receivers?
Somebody who I think has kind of been rising lately is the Georgia Tech wide receiver. And also Alshon Jeffrey from South Carolina. Has both of those players just have amazing physical abilities. I think Stephen Hill, 6'4", 215, runs a 4.36, but we'll round that up. I mean, that's just freakishly good. Alshon Jeffrey put up similar numbers, just not quite as fast, but I mean, if we're going just based on talent and athleticism, I think those are the two guys to look out for, other than Justin Blackmon, who's also a freak. But
yeah, I've got Floyd as my top guy. 6'3", 220, fairly fast. He catches almost anything thrown his way. A huge receiver. I think he's got the best career of any of these guys. And then for sort of an overlooked player, Alshon Jeffrey, I believe coming partway through last year, was projected to be like maybe a top 10 or 15 pick in the whole draft. And now he's projected to go, according to NFLDraftScout.com, they've got him going 6th in the second round. This guy had 1,500 receiving yards 2 years ago. 1,500. And then he only had 700, which is still respectable. But 700 this past year, because they had a very rough QB situation going on in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But 1,500 yards 2 years ago, he's huge. I've seen him make a number of ridiculous one-handed catches. I think this guy's got an excellent future coming. And if second round is a steal, if I see him late first round, I'd take him for sure. And then finally, defense. We'll go with our brightest outlook defender. Who you got?
I think Morris Claiborne really, he could turn a team around, honestly, and it's
LSU cornerback.
It's LSU cornerback Morris Claiborne, and it's hard to say that a defensive player can have that type of impact, but he's sort of being
like Darrell Revis.
Yeah, he's a shutdown corner. He has the ability to just completely shut down a whole half of the field. And a lot of websites are projecting him to go to the Bucks, and I think that'd be a great fit. Number 5 to the Bucks, replacing Rondae Barber for another 10-15 years.
Yeah, I originally was going to go with that. I've seen him play a number of times at LSU, and he's very good. But I'm actually going to go with somebody I've known about for a few years now. Dre Kirkpatrick out of Alabama has always been a highly regarded corner, an excellent shutdown corner like Claiborne. But he's 6'2". Claiborne is 5'11", so he's not super short or anything for a corner. But
yeah, with that size, he can get physical.
Yeah, Kirkpatrick can be a Antonio Cromartie sort of player, and because he can handle, if he's going against a 6'3 receiver, and he can match them height-wise and jump in ability and all that. And obviously coming out of Bama, they allowed, I think, 8 points a game last year, Bama did, so... he was obviously a big part of that. And then for sort of a diamond in the rough, I've got Travis Lewis, linebacker out of Oklahoma. Talked about a lot last year, but got injured this past season. So overlooked there, I think. But I think now coming out healthy again, I think he'll be really good.
Somebody else I think where a lot of people are overlooking, especially since Luke Kuechly out of Boston College is getting a lot of hype. Another inside linebacker, highly regarded as probably the second best in this draft class, Dante Hightower. I mean, he was all over the field in Bama's title-winning season. I think he's somebody that has a really promising future as well. And then to close this week's segment, we'll move on to hockey. Blues in the playoffs, as we all know, winning 2-1 in the series against the San Jose Sharks. They play Thursday at San Jose in the Shark Tank. That game could be huge. And to cap off this week's segment, we'll give a shout out to the Blues, 2-1 in the series right now, facing San Jose. They play this Thursday in the Shark Tank. One thing to keep in mind, past three games this series, Blues have been scoring 3-3-4 is what how many points they've scored in each game. So that's one thing to keep an eye out for. For an update in the Royals game, Royals are down 4-3 in the top of the eighth. I told you we'd lose it, Tom.
It's all right. Maybe they'll come back next time. Who are they playing?
Tigers.
Oh, again?
Yeah.
Is this the, how many
this games is this? This is game three of the series. We're about to get swept.
It's unfortunate.
Go 0-6 at home. But, all right, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Jacob Barry here.
And Pat McNamara. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Always good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
See you next week. Make sure you tune in.